This is Dorothy Harrison interviewing Mildred Blandford, B-L-A-N-D-F-O-R-D, in Louisville, Kentucky, in October 1983. Mildred, who presently lives in Washington, D.C., is back in Louisville for a short visit, and we took the opportunity of interviewing her since she is still a member of the Louisville unit of the Women's Overseas Service League. All right, Mildred, let's start with first your telling me what branch of service you served in with the Red Cross, and how long, for how long, and where. So first of all, the branch of service.
The hospital service.
You were with the hospital service, and in what capacity?
I was a secretary to a unit headed by an assistant field director.
Very good. All right. And how long did you do this job?
I was only in the service about 15 months, going in August of 1944 and coming out in November of 1945.
And where did you serve?
I served in the ETO in Paris most of the time. In 44 when I first crossed the ocean. And when the war was over in May over there, I volunteered to go to the Pacific.
Did you get there?
Yes.
And where did you land?
I landed in Okinawa, finally, after 8 weeks crossing the Pacific Ocean.
So you began in Europe and you ended in the Pacific. That's quite a spread. I'd like to ask another question. I should have perhaps asked this first. So at this point, I will go backwards a trifle. Now, I'd like to ask you some information on what you did before the service. In other words, give me some biographical information about yourself.
I was born in Louisville, Kentucky, and is that what you want?
Yes, you're born in Louisville.
And did my this ordinary schooling at graduated from Atherton High School and went 1 year to the University of Louisville and couldn't continue because of family reasons. And then I got a job with a chain grocery store here in Louisville, and
that was Winn-Dixie,
wasn't it? Private secretary, yes.
You were private secretary with Winn-Dixie.
Of course, I went to business school too before I did that.
Yes, I see. And had you worked for them for any length of time?
I worked for them about 10 years, I think, before the war.
Yes, before.
And tried to enlist in the American Red Cross a long time before I got in because I was too, didn't weigh enough.
You didn't weigh enough.
I didn't weigh enough.
You had to gain some weight before you could.
They said their girls lost about 20 pounds going overseas, and if I lost 20 pounds, I would be more of a burden to them
than an asset.
Yes.
All right, that gives us a little start on your background. Very well, now we'll return to the series of questions which we've been asked to ask each of our individuals to be interviewed. And that is, what influenced you to volunteer?
Just a sense of adventure, I suppose, and the fact that I'd worked for a man who was in World War I and who had me quite interested in the whole subject of going overseas and so on. He, in fact, wanted to go again himself and couldn't. And besides that, I was very, very interested in the war and the reasons for the war, and I wanted to go.
Very good. All right. And what did you do in the service? Now, we've already told us that you were in a hospital unit as a secretary, but what were your specific tasks?
Well, the basic task, I guess, for a secretary was to sort of keep the books, what books they were for the unit, and also to be sure that we had the supplies we needed, and cigarettes and stuff like that. And then my job was to help out wherever I could, like going around the hospital wards and writing letters for the boys who wanted to, reading to them if they wanted to, wanted me to, playing with them in the recreation hall, cards, checkers, whatever.
So it wasn't all just transcribing notes and writing letters for the... did you That's do right. this, by the way, you said for an assistant field director, so your involvement as a secretary was in no way connected with the Army unit you were with?
Not at all.
Not at all. What Army unit were you with?
We were an auxiliary.
You were an auxiliary.
I was with the 194th General Hospital.
194th. General Hospital. And your assistant field director was, can you remember what his or her name was?
Her name was Catherine Rice.
Catherine Rice, all right. And she would, of course, have been taking care of some social problems. In other words, if the men had some special problem.
Yes, money-wise or family-wise, or whether somebody died at home and they wanted to leave, she had to attend to all of that.
That's right. And then this was also the type of letter you would have to write.
Right.
very good. Now, the next question is, and this sounds like a circa 1970s, 80s question from the point of view of the, a woman's movement. Question: did you expect this experience to prepare you for a career, and did it?
No, I never expected anything. I could maybe have gotten a job at the Red Cross when I came out, but I felt a need to go home. But I never expected to.
In other words,
to be anything but a temporary help in the during the war.
Very good. And what was your pay?
I think I made about $200 a month. Not positive, but I know it seemed like plenty then.
Yes, I agree with you. I think that must have been roughly the correct amount. Perhaps a little more. I remember I was paid $1,500 with the American Red Cross in 1943, and I eventually rose to the heights of $1,800 in the 2.5 years
I
was there.
That would be, I'm sure you made more than I did, but I thought I did.
About 200.
It seemed like there was an extra bonus for going overseas or something.
I see. All right. Here's another one of these feminist questions. Were you given equal opportunity for service and education?
Well, I certainly felt that I was at the time because I didn't expect anything. I just went over there to do my bit, you might say.
Right.
And I was treated beautifully the whole time, taken care of.
Right. And your education was taken care of by your previous experience, of course, as a secretary. And were you given any special training by the Red Cross?
Just the ordinary training.
How long?
For going overseas with a hospital, which I had never done before.
Of course. Right. How long was that period?
Only 3 weeks in Washington.
In Washington, right.
The rest of it you got on the job.
Exactly. Now, what assignments were given to women?
Like what do you mean?
Well, this, as I say, I believe this is an ERA era questionnaire. They seem to be terribly worried about women. I think what they're trying to find out here is if somehow or other women were given lowly jobs, whereas the men were always given the big ones. As you've just
Not
told
at
me
all.
That, as you were just telling me, your assistant field director was a woman.
We were all women in our group.
So there wasn't much point in. There's really not much point in answering that question.
No, because the women. Well, we were billeted with the. About 33 nurses. Women were kept separate from the men and all that.
Thank God.
Yes. And the men looked out for us, and I was certainly not aware of any
discrimination.
No.
What was the nature of your housing? You've just said that you were billeted with the nurses, what type of housing did you have with the 194th?
Well, after we got settled, going over there and getting, before we got to Paris, we just took whatever we could possibly have. And they weren't always of the best. But that was nobody's fault, but the war's fault.
Exactly. In other words, you spent some time in tents?
No, until I got to Pacific.
I see. You were in tents.
In Europe, we were never in tents. We were in a villa off near a little spot near Le Havre for about 3 weeks during the Battle of the Bulge. And we were sort of closely bedded down there.
A little crowded.
The women were.
Yes.
And it was cold and miserable sometimes, and we went without baths, and kept our clothes on and all that. But it was all adventure.
Exactly.
The best we could do.
And then when you got into final quarters, where were you, outside
when
of
we,
Paris?
We were billeted in Paris, right near the Arc de Triomphe.
Oh, good.
In a hotel called the Pennsylvania Hotel, in the Rue des Acacias. And went out to the hospital, which was at the Porte de Saint-Cloud. And we went there every morning on the metro.
And when you say this nice little hotel, Pennsylvania Hotel, did it have single rooms, or were you two in a room, or?
We were two in a room. I was with my friend Catherine Way, who was staff aide.
I see. And your room was, of course, supplied
We had
by
a maid,
the,
my dear.
You had a
we
maid?
We had a maid who laid out our pajamas every night.
I'd say you lived in luxury. And this, of course, this housing was supplied to you free of charge.
Absolutely. As far as I know, it had nothing to do with the
arrangements. In other words, your pay was in addition to the pay we previously mentioned was in addition to housing and food.
Yes, yeah, and yes.
And your uniforms, I believe, were also covered.
Right.
So, now what about medical care? Of course, in the middle of a hospital,
we had doctors all around us all the time.
That was very, very handy dandy. And what was your dress, your standard dress? Was it?
Well, the regular Red Cross, sort of Oxford gray with the little blue tabs and so on.
All right.
In the wintertime.
In the
summertime,
wintertime.
They were lighter blue seersucker.
Oh, you had the seersucker dresses.
Mm-hmm.
All right. Now, I need to ask you what your memorable experiences were. You can take it from any place you want.
Well, we did so many things. We were stationed in Paris, and
where did your men come from?
They came from the field stations first.
Yes.
We had mostly the patients from the Battle of the Bulge. At least that's what I remember the most of. And we would meet them. The ambulances would come in, and we would meet them at any time of the day or night. And we would probably know when they were coming, and we'd meet them with cigarettes or donuts or whatever, depending on the degree of injuries. And then they were brought into the hospital. And I remember one boy in particular who came in wrapped from head to foot in bandages. He'd been terribly, terribly burned. And he was terribly, terribly bitter and would not open up and talk or do anything or let you help him in any way. And that sort of has always stayed with me as the most poignant case that I came across,
yes.
And then you had others who didn't want to write home. They didn't want to tell anybody all
that
about
they
their
were
misery.
Wounded.
Yes. And sometimes you had a little success and got them to write home.
Yes.
And then you felt like you had
accomplished something.
Yes.
All right, then, did they stay long with you at the 194th?
No, they didn't. The ambulatory ones might stay 2 or 3 weeks, but the very seriously injured were hustled on out of Paris to London and then to the United States.
In other words, you were a transient facility, in effect. And those that were not so badly hurt they could go back to duty.
Yes, and so we entertained them as much as we could.
Yes.
And played games with them and so on. And some of them felt like we were people, their home, you know.
Yes. And I suspect there were some romances going on, or would be romances.
And they would almost cry when they had to go back to
the front. And did you have any, as we would say, nervous in the service or war-weary men, battle-shocked types?
Yes, but I guess we didn't see a whole lot of them.
They were sent to different facilities.
At least I didn't, because I had no training for that. So.
Yes, of course. That would be true. All right, and then when you got to the Pacific, I think you once told me something about a terrific typhoon you were in.
Typhoon, that's right. Yeah. Two of them. The first one, we managed to stay in our tents and drew our, all of us, we were about, maybe 10 beds in this tent. And the storm was coming from one direction, and so we put all the beds over on the other side as far away as we could get from the rain that would come in the screened top of the tent. And we sang all night long one night, singing all kinds of songs that we'd never known. And then the next time, maybe only a couple of weeks later, here comes another one.
So now, when was this actually?
We landed in Okinawa on the 1st of September, 1945.
45. So yes. This was a September or October typhoon?
Mostly late September,
late
I guess.
September. Right.
Because I do remember a few weeks of peace and quiet as far as storms are concerned. And so the next time, the Seabees came and hauled us away to their, what do you call those?
Quonset
huts, yes.
And you were.
We later learned that there was more danger in those Quonset huts during a tornado or a typhoon, as they call them over there, because if the top blew off, and
you go blowing with it.
They're made out of that steel or whatever they are.
Yeah, they'd decapitate you if you got in the way.
Decapitate you.
Well, at least they were thinking of you.
Yes, they were. They took good care of us.
Yes. Your housing then in Okinawa was in tents, as you've already said, and these tents were...
They weren't canvas tents or anything like that. They had canvas tops, but wooden bottoms and screened in...
Sides. Was it half wood up halfway?
Half wood, yes.
And then screened the rest of the way. And each, were they
and
raised
some
up on...
kind of a more permanent top. I don't remember just exactly what it was, whether it was canvas or tarpaulin.
Or something of that sort. And then you were they up on stilts or were they on the ground?
Yes, I think they were on stilts.
On stilts. Yeah. I keep remembering that they used to put
got
things
some
up.
Pictures somewhere, but where they are.
Yes. Well, at any rate, it was not quite the same as the little hotel in Paris with
no,
the maid
it wasn't.
Service.
It wasn't.
All right. We'll get back then to the list
and
of questions.
After, well, you might be interested to hear this, after 6 weeks of this, two typhoons, General Stilwell ordered all the women off the island to go home.
Oh, he did?
So we came home.
Very interesting. Yes. I had no idea that he decided that was too much.
I could have stayed, but by this time I was soaked out. All my clothes were in ruins. I thought it was best to go home with the rest of the women.
With the women, and what was the date of at this point?
This is about the middle of October, 1945.
Well, the war was over.
Yes.
And so I'm sure General Stilwell thought there was not much point in continuing to keep you there. Very well, we'll go on with the questions.
We had also welcomed back some Japanese prisoners, American Japanese prisoners.
Oh, you did?
Yes, what with coffee and donuts.
What condition were they in?
Well, more or less normal. They seemed in pretty good shape, the ones I saw.
Yes. Then they were going on from Okinawa back to the United States. Flown or shipped?
I expect they were going to be shipped.
Shipped, yes, probably. Now, this next question, can you compare service careers then with the present?
Not really, I can't, because I don't know anything about the present.
Very good. 13, did you experience conflict between being feminine and being a military professional? Since you weren't a military professional, that seems a totally beside the point question, doesn't it?
Well, I think there were some, maybe some officers who had some kind of an objection to women being over there, but not to any
great extent. And certainly you didn't have any trouble being feminine, did you?
No.
14, did you use benefits of the GI Bill?
No, we were not entitled to that under the Red Cross.
No, of course you weren't. It was, American Red Cross was totally voluntary. What demanded the greatest adjustment for you in getting used to your overseas experience? Uniforms, or living with others, or regulations, or lack of freedom, or the terminology that was...
Well, I sort of enjoyed the whole thing. I suppose maybe the hardest thing to do was to live with such a great big group of women.
Yes.
And taking showers together and so on, you know.
The lack of privacy.
Yes.
The lack of privacy. What was the most unpopular regulation that you met? Were there any? Were you confined to quarters for any reason after a certain hour?
Not that I remember. The whole thing was just a big experience for me, and I enjoyed it.
What have you done after your service?
Well, I came home. Actually, my mother expected me home, needed me home, and I came home and went back to my same job I'd had before, and continued on, became an office manager for the company.
It's a Winn-Dixie, wasn't it?
Yes.
Yes.
And went down to Montgomery, Alabama, and stayed a couple of years with them. And finally came back to Louisville, again because of my mother's health. And then she died, and I, having had a long time dream of going back to Europe, I went back and stayed for 6 years in Paris and London.
I think that's so such an interesting part of your life. And what did you do over in Paris?
Well, I first went back to my first love, which was Paris, and first thing I did was go to the American Embassy and see if there's any possibility of getting a job. And they told me no, that the Americans living in Paris were not eligible for a job with the American Embassy, that if they gave jobs to anyone over there, they must give them to French people. So they sent me over to the Chamber of Commerce, and I went over there and met a delightful French woman, American woman, I think, who was born in Paris. Anyway, do you want me to go into all that?
Well, it doesn't miss, as long as you, just as we find out how you ended.
Yes. I went to school.
Yes.
Went to the Alliance Francaise and worked for a year and a half. All the time having been promised finally that I might get a job at the embassy. And finally, after a year and a half about, I got a job with... They called me in and gave me a job with the CIA.
All right, now
that an office across from the American Embassy.
In other words, although they had said they needed to give you a, you know, that they would give the job to the French. In this case, they didn't want CIA job, right?
That's right. They couldn't use a French person
in this position. And I suspect also they. When you had first arrived in Paris, your French was not in such
not
good condition.
Very good at all, no. So I worked with them for about a year in Paris, and at that time, Mr. de Gaulle wanted us to get out of Paris. We were under the NATO organization.
So the job was through the embassy, not... In other words, you worked for the CIA, but it was you got the job through the embassy.
Right.
And it was the CIA that was in NATO.
That's right.
Or under
connected with NATO.
Right.
And so we were requested to move our office out of Paris. So my boss decided he wanted to go to London. And I went to London with him. I worked there for 3.5 years until Mr. Nixon called all the extra help that had been hired in Paris and London to come home. And I came home again.
You came home again?
After 6 years.
And you were a secretary in the CIA?
Secretary and receptionist.
Receptionist, yes. Mm-hmm. All right.
Again, an odds and ends
job.
Kind of job, yes.
All right, fine. And then did you retire at once?
Well, yes.
Yes.
From
at
my
that point.
Any formal.
And I know that you came back to Louisville and that you stayed with us a number of years and then decided to go and live in Washington, which was near the closest relatives that you had, your sister.
Exactly.
And so we lost you. But
not entirely.
No, not entirely. Now, before we conclude this interview, Mildred, I would like you to tell that little story about your experiences in the school in Washington, D.C., when you were preparing to go overseas. I recall that it was interested me because I'm a northerner and you're from the south, and it shows that certainly there was no unanimity of feeling in the south on a very important question. And I should have thought of this when we were talking about your 3 weeks of training in Washington, but I didn't. So now will you tell that little story again?
Well, I think what you're talking about, Dorothy, is the lower class of people looking for the job with the Red Cross before we were sent overseas. There was a classroom with a woman who conducted it and so on, who was asking us questions, just general questions and so on, and she happened to ask if we knew if after we got overseas and we were at a dance being given for the soldiers, if a black soldier asked us to dance, what would we do? And I was a little bit shocked by the fact that there was silence while I suppose everybody was thinking about what they would do. And I knew immediately what she wanted to hear, and I put up my hand and said, well, I would dance with him, of course. And she wrote something down on a little piece of paper, and within the next few days, my name was called to go out with the 194th General Hospital.
Good.
So that started it all.
Well, I like that story. I, of course, I have, since I've lived in Louisville now for 30 years, I realize this is a city which is certainly not deep south in its antagonisms and in its intolerances. It's actually a very cosmopolitan and liberal city.
I always thought so.
Right. And I have grown to love the city very much. So that I'm always happy to be able to say that I have respected this place and its people. Well, thank you very much, Mildred, for the interview, and we'll hope that this serves some historical purpose at some future date.
Thank you. I enjoyed it.